The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, here we go. Time to blast off for a Friday. Oh, the weekend is here, and that's a good thing. But with so much going on behind the scenes over which we have no control, it's a bit disconcerting, right? I don't know about you, but I've been sort of obsessed with, you know, the actions taken by the current guy here in Florida, Ron DeSantis, the governor, the man who wants to be president, the man who wants to be dictator, actually, and the stunt that he pulled, sending a bunch of asylum seekers, migrants, they're being called in the press, to Martha's Vineyard, of all places, leaving them, dropping them off basically in the middle of nowhere and saying you're on your own. These poor people were misled. We'll get into some of that in a little while. Just it's disgusting. But what warmed my heart is the way the people on Martha's Vineyard reacted and took care of these asylum seekers, people who entered the country legally and are going through the process of petitioning for asylum. And that's how it works. So, idiot DeSantis thought he was getting one over on these people and us, owning the libs, as it were. And he just proved himself to be what you knew he was. He's just a reprehensible piece of human excrement. Maybe not even human excrement. Some kind of wild animal. Like, I'm in Florida, so opossum excrement. Or rattlesnake or iguana excrement, because that's the biggest nuisance down here these days. You get the idea. You know what I'm talking about. We'll get into that. But the other thing that happened last night that's being overshadowed by this idiotic situation that moron death sentence put into play is this so-called judge in Florida, appointed to a lifetime position by the former guy who's now doing his bidding. So last night, in case you missed it, it was after the show, this so-called judge, Eileen Cannon, ruled that they would indeed name this special master to go through all the documents taken from Mar-a-Lago when they went there with a search warrant. And she denied the Justice Department's solution. Let them temporarily stay the part of the ruling that says that the DOJ, the FBI, that these investigators don't have access to those classified documents so they could continue their investigation. She said no to that. Well, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on the radio, so I wanted to call on somebody who could explain to us just how completely batshit crazy this whole thing is. Not that I want to put words into Lisa Graves' mouth, but Lisa Graves is on the line with us, I believe. Lisa, you there? Uh-oh. Oh, she was, I thought. All right, let's try calling Lisa again. We will do it again. I guess I didn't have her. I thought I had her up there waiting. And, that, you know, this is what happens when I call somebody when they're not on the Zoom these days. Have to do the old-fashioned.
Hey,
Lisa, it's Nicole calling.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. Hi. So Lisa Graves is a former, she's the founder and director of True North Research, which you need to check out at truenorthresearch.org. But Lisa was also a deputy assistant attorney general in both the Clinton and George W. Bush administrations under Janet Reno and John Ashcroft. Did I finally get that right?
That's right.
So Lisa, what I was saying is this so-called judge, Eileen Cannon, ruled last night that she basically gave Donald Trump and his lawyers what they wanted and told the Justice Department to go, go climb a tree or something. Is she qualified to be a judge?
I would never have appointed her to be a judge. This is a person who was in her late 30s when she was picked by Donald Trump to become a federal judge down there in Florida in that specific district that is near Mar-a-Lago. She's someone who barely had the minimum of 10 years that is usually the bare minimum for the American Bar Association to say that someone could possibly be qualified. But in this instance, she never previously served as a judge at the state level or as a magistrate. And her decisions in this case are horrifying. They reflect a severe partisan bias, a lack of understanding the law, and a willingness to basically assert in her writing, including the writing from last night, that Donald Trump is above the law, that he gets special treatment as former president, even though he's no longer president,
right.
Even though these documents were manifestly documents that he should not have, should never have taken just on their face, and there was probable cause to seize them. And so I'm shocked and horrified that this person has a federal judgeship. She was confirmed just after the election with a substantial majority of Republican votes and a few Democrats.
Yep.
And she's someone who never should have been appointed to the bench ever. And I hope that she'll be impeached one day.
Right. And this was, okay, as you mentioned, she was appointed by Trump after the election, after he already lost. Why did Democrats go along with voting for this woman to appoint her when she was not qualified? I don't know that you can answer that. It's just one of those head scratchers. But as you notice, when she handed down this ruling last night, that everybody, all the legal minds that I listened to, all said that the Justice Department was giving her a graceful out because her initial ruling was so off, was so out of the norms of you know, the rule of law, that this would give her an out to let them keep doing their investigation, put a stay on these 100 or so classified documents so they could keep doing their work and she could deal with the other, and the special master could deal with the other stuff. But she rejected that. And in her reasoning, at the end of her decision, she directly said that Donald Trump is entitled to more process than anyone else. She says her decision is impacted by, quote, the position formerly held by the plaintiff. Well, that's not how it works, is it?
No, that's not how it works in a democracy. First of all, no one should get special treatment, no matter what their office is, and it certainly shouldn't impact what their former office was. There's a very limited number of cases where, for a sitting president, some cases have been stayed until after the conclusion of a presidency, not criminal cases, obviously, but civil cases, and not always. But here you have a judge. Her title is judge, but she's acting like a partisan hack.
Yep.
She's acting like a toady for Donald Trump and willing to set aside the law, set aside precedent, and do everything she can to basically protect him, including this extraordinary and seemingly unprecedented effort to interfere in an ongoing criminal investigation by barring the United States government from looking at documents that belong to the United States government. This is genuinely an outrage. It's unacceptable. I hope that there's some way to sanction her. But as I said, I hope she's ultimately removed because she's shown by her actions that she's not someone who can be entrusted with fairly interpreting the law. And she's someone who clearly is trying to put her thumb on the scale of justice in favor of the man who appointed her.
Yeah.
She probably should have recused herself if she had any integrity, but she didn't.
Well, she should have regardless because Trump went judge shopping. This case should have gone to the magistrate, the same one who signed off on the search warrant, right?
Well, it would be, it certainly looks like there was judge shopping, forum shopping going on by Trump. But what makes me also curious is the sort of forum shopping in advance. This is a position that is one of the judgeships that basically would theoretically have power over cases involving Mar-a-Lago because of its proximity. And so it would be shocking if Donald Trump hadn't paid personal attention to who he was putting in
right.
that position. And for him to go out of his way to choose someone so inexperienced, someone so unworthy of this position. And also, this is a person who actually served previously for a couple of years. You know, she hasn't been practicing law that long as a former prosecutor. And for her to act with such disdain for other prosecutors who she knows how they build cases. She knows what it means for a magistrate to find probable cause for search and seizure. And for her to disregard that just shows how, in my view, out of control she is and how willing she is to basically do the bidding of the man who appointed her and gave her this position of power with a six-figure salary for the rest of her life unless she's removed.
Wow. Now, we heard when she first handed down the ruling calling for the special master, and all the, you know, great legal minds out there said, this woman is wrong about everything. We heard the Justice Department, they said they were going to appeal. And instead, they offered this sort of solution, which would have been a good out for her to retain her, you know, pretend whatever. It's not objectivity by any means.
Right.
But she didn't. She instead doubled down on the crazy. So what's is Merrick Garland going to appeal? I mean, what happens next?
Well, I'm not sure, but, you know, the reality, unfortunately, in our country right now is that Donald Trump has packed the bench. The 11th Circuit, which is the federal court of appeal that oversees these district court judges in Florida, is one that has been particularly targeted by the right wing for packing. It has a number of extremists who have been appointed to that bench by Trump. And, of course, we are facing a U.S. Supreme Court that has also been packed by Donald Trump with the help of dark money guru, the dark money maestro, Leonard Leo, who was putting people on the bench specifically for their loyalty, in essence, to his vision of the world, which is one in which women do not have reproductive rights, in which we do not have constitutional protection for gay rights, and in which we don't have the power through our agencies to really effectively regulate corporations who he sides with and who he favors. And so, you know, there are risks in appealing because Donald Trump was able, with the help of Mitch McConnell and the Republicans, to pack the courts, the federal courts at almost every level, basically, not every circuit, but most of them. And you have a situation in which, as you pointed out, Nicole, that this person was confirmed because of a majority of Republican, basically more than 50 of the votes in favor of her were Republicans. All the Republicans who voted for her. A number of the Democrats were absent because it was in the post-election process and people were out in the states trying to make sure that Donald Trump didn't steal the election. And a handful of Dems, I think it's fewer than 12 or 12, voted for her. But they weren't, you know, that wasn't the decisive factor. The decisive factor was the Republicans vote in lockstep for anyone that Donald Trump chose, no matter how unqualified they are or were. And that just shows how partisan and how distorting and in some ways politically corrupting it has been in terms of our federal judiciary. Our federal judiciary, its reputation is in tatters because of the actions by this U.S. Supreme Court, but also because of actions like a judge like this, who is really, in my view, out of line, is acting really out of step with precedent and with common sense. She's acting as a partisan hack, in my personal view.
Right. That's what's so frightening. So, Lisa, I want to just go back and stress what you just said. If they do, if the Justice Department does appeal, it goes to, you said, the 11th Circuit. Was it the 11th?
That's right.
That has 11 judges on it, six of whom were appointed by Donald Trump. So a majority.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And a lot of those judges have, you know, hail from that same sort of right-wing infrastructure. They weren't chosen necessarily because they had reputations of fairness on other benches.
None of them.
A lot of them were chosen, you know, basically they have close ties to the federal society. They belong to that sort of elite right-wing operation that was created to try to put key people in positions all over the government, including judgeships, who would adhere to what they described as a libertarian or conservative view of the law, but there's nothing conservative about it. The reality is that this this slate of judges that Trump chose and really outsourced to Leonard Leo and his buddies is just stacked with people who are, you know, more devoted to a very narrow, rigid sort of right-wing view of things than actual conservatism, meaning following the law, following precedent, following the longstanding laws that we operate on in this country. And I think that she, in some ways, exemplifies that with her willingness to disregard precedent, to disregard common sense, and to put her thumb on the scale of justice as a judge, in my personal view.
You know, Lisa Graves, somebody in the chat room, Charlotte, just said, should she not be disbarred? Who makes that kind of decision?
Well, you know, there certainly are ways in which a state bar, you know, has oversight over practicing lawyers, although obviously she's a practicing judge. In general, you know, allegations of misconduct, if they can prove like a financial conflict, for example, that would go, you know, to the ethics, you know, that would be under the code of ethics for U.S. judges, and that would be handled by the chief judge of that district. The challenge here is that we may not ever be able to determine whether there's any financial connection or other connection that would violate the surface of the code of conduct. But what it seems to violate is just the general, sort of a general obligation of an appearance of fairness, where you have someone who is so willing to disregard, you know, the longstanding rules that relate to prosecutions, to federal criminal investigations. In fact, like, this is probably one of the most serious criminal investigations that you could possibly have, yeah, involving national security secrets. And yet you have this person behaving in such a cavalier fashion. I think this is an area, Nicole, where, like so many areas we've seen over the last few years, where the codes that exist for ethics seriously need to be updated to address the sort of things where we've seen, which I guess someone could call a gray area. You don't have a financial conflict that's apparent, but you have someone who's behaving in a way that really calls into question the integrity of the justice system.
Right. And so now, with this judge's ruling last night, what she said is the special master now has until the end of November to go through all of these documents. Really? So everything stops until the end of November on this investigation, where there are top secret and other confidential documents apparently missing because there were a number of empty envelopes, and what part of the investigation was to find out what happened to whatever was in those folders. So they're just enjoined, they're stopped from doing anything now?
Well, that seems to be another element of the sort of political approach this person has taken, Eileen Cannon, where, you know, that obviously sets any next step, any ruling in essence after the election, when Trump is actively out there canvassing, campaigning for people in Florida, as well as in other states who are, you know, extremists who share his views, who do not respect the electoral process, who are, you know, really trying to dismantle key protections in our democracy. And so I think that's another indication of the political nature of it. But also, here you have a circumstance where these materials relate to apparently some of our most secrets. They relate to not just top secret material, but also what we used to call letter clearance, where you have only very few people can see that material because it relates to sources and methods of our national intelligence community. Also, you know, it's been reported that it involves nuclear secrets, nuclear information. And then, as you point out, there are a number of files in which there's no document there, just the cover of the file exists. And so this is a real crisis,
yeah,
in terms of our national security as America. And to have, you know, this be treated as if it's, you know, I guess in some ways some sort of routine case where time is not of the essence is also disturbing. The fact is that I think that what we're ultimately going to see in this case is what led the government to pursue these documents, which was the learning that they were taken, and learning that apparently there was access to them by people, you know, where they were being held at Mar-a-Lago, and that some of them are missing.
Yeah.
This is genuinely like a house on fire sort of situation. And to have this judge intervening in this way is really extraordinary and unacceptable, both in terms of the law and the notion of the rule of law, which conservatives supposedly support, but also just our national security as a country.
Right. And then, so one last question on this subject, Lisa Graves, is there any doubt in your mind how these Republicans who are saying, it's no big deal, it's a storage problem, it's he has the right to those documents, he was the president, he can declassify anything he wants, how these same people would react if in some alternate universe Barack Obama walked away with boxes and boxes and boxes of classified documents from when he was president?
Well, I don't think any reasonable person could say that they would be behaving in the same way. And in fact, as we saw at the Republican National Convention and numerous Trump rallies, they were chanting "lock her up"
yep.
for Hillary Clinton
yep.
for an email server,
yep. Yep.
And that was nothing like what we've seen here. And you have a situation in which a former president, someone who is no longer president, was not reelected, has retained documents that he had no right to retain.
Right.
And even if he were to claim that he had some sort of magic wand that he could walk in a room and declassify everything, which is actually not the way the world works, not the way declassification works, he still wouldn't be able to just take them with him. This is a complete farce that they've constructed this notion that this is like a library book that he didn't return. That's quite frankly bullshit. And I'll say that to you quite directly, because those claims are ridiculous. They're not how classification and declassification works. And it's not how it works. And also with these kinds of documents, and it's, even if he had declassified them, he could not take them to his personal residence. Every single thing about this is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, all indications are that it's illegal. And if we have a justice system and a justice department that is you know, I think as devoted as I think it is to the rule of law, Donald Trump will be prosecuted for what he's done. I hope he is, and I hope he's convicted.
Well, I hope so, too. The question is anybody, I mean, I'm hoping, and does it come down to Merrick Garland? Is the ball in his court now as to what happens next?
Well, that's the way that's the way it's supposed to work.
Okay.
As you can see from some of the statements by Donald Trump and his Confederates, they believe that Justice Department should just be reporting to the president. They were trying to pressure the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York to basically play ball with the president and play political ball with him. That's not how the Justice Department is supposed to work. That's not how the U.S. Attorney's Office is supposed to work. That's how this very corrupt man who was in the office of the president believed the world should be, in his sort of Roy Cohn, totally corrupt approach to the law. But that's not how it works. And so this is a decision that is not Biden's decision. It's a decision of the Justice Department. It's a decision based on the recommendations of the prosecutors who are involved. And I'm hopeful, based on what we've seen so far and the fact that they were they've been pursuing these documents, that there will be a righteous and just outcome in which the people who violated the law, in my opinion, there's evidence that suggests that they did. And in fact, I believe personally that they that he did,
mm-hmm.
That he will be held to account and will be punished for his crimes if he's convicted, which I hope he will be.
I hope so, too. Look, Merrick Garland, it looks like the Justice Department's investigation into Trump and all of his misdeeds is finally, you know, it's happening. They issued like somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 subpoenas in the last few days. So it's ramping up. They are doing their job. So, again, Marcy Wheeler for months was, as we were all going, where the fuck is Merrick Garland? She's saying, be patient. Let him do his job. And so hopefully he's doing his job. Let me ask you one other thing, Lisa Graves, because we're all watching in horror to see what the Florida governor did, putting these what they call migrants, I call them asylum seekers, on a plane to Martha's Vineyard, of all places, lying to them, telling them, oh, there'll be, you know, job opportunities and housing and everything waiting for you there. Well, there was nothing there. They dropped them in the middle of an empty field and nobody was expecting them. They had to walk. They walked like a few miles until they came upon, I guess, the town, and the people took them in and the people embraced them. And Ron DeSantis is saying, you know, I have $12 million in my budget so I can, here's what he said. You can hear this. Listen to his own words. Sorry, I'll apologize in advance. I think, come on. Now it doesn't want to play. You know, this always happens. All right, so I'll tell you. He said, I've got $12 million and we're going to spend every cent of it. But it says the $12 million is to move migrants out of Florida. These migrants were never in Florida. We are not a border state. We are, you know, we border the ocean. There's no migrants coming in here from Mexico and South America. Here's the clip. Now I can play it.
I got $12 million for us to use, and so we are going to use it. And you're going to see more and more, but I'm going to make sure that we exhaust all those funds because I think it's important. I think people want to see that we're actually standing up and trying to protect the state against Biden's really, really reckless policies.
He's not protecting the state against anything. He's spending taxpayer dollars on a political stunt, using human beings as pawns. This is despicable.
I am genuinely astonished by it, Nicole. I mean, this stunt harkens back to one of the stunts pulled by the white supremacists during the civil rights movement, where after James Meredith was enrolled in a public university, and the right wing white supremacists were objecting to it. There was a leader of this white supremacist movement that basically sent a family up to the, you know, attorney general, to Katzenbach's home, to basically say he was going to employ them. It's a political stunt, and it's despicable to use human beings in this way. And it actually may not be lawful,
yeah,
in terms of trafficking in human beings. But it really shows just the desperation and the willingness of a politician, you know, like DeSantis, to just cruelly use people to try to score political points, and to do so in a way that I think just really disregards the reality of the labor force, mm-hmm, not just in Florida, but other places. You know, I know that there have been times where, due to these raids during Trump, where there were, you know, whole crops that weren't harvested because of this culture of fear, this climate of fear that was created by raiding these farms and by, you know, raiding other facilities. And, you know, we clearly need to do something to address the ability of people to have the power to work in this country and to have the power to cross borders lawfully, to be able to be reunited with their families,
yep,
and to honor the work that people are doing in the field, work that a lot of people aren't willing to do. And that you have someone like DeSantis, you know, behaving this way, you know, taking a page from the Texas governor, who's been trying to play this same scheme, to try to create a crisis that where there isn't really a crisis. There is a longstanding set of policies that need to be addressed in terms of migration for people, both for migrants and for citizens or people who want to become citizens. And, you know, we can't ignore the fact that this seems to be very much targeted at people who have brown skin.
Yeah.
And I think it's just horrifying to see this happening in the year 2022 and to see, you know, this sort of play being made. But as you pointed out, I'm also heartened by the fact that the people who were up there in Martha's Vineyard, who saw these people, these people who were just shipped up north, and welcomed them and treated them with dignity, the dignity that every single human being deserves,
exactly,
no matter where they were born.
Yep.
That should be a fundamental principle of, you know, America. And if you're a conservative, it ought to be a fundamental principle to you, too, that people are entitled to dignity, to be,
yep,
treated with dignity, and not to be shipped around like cattle in order to try to score political points with the most base of the base of the Republican Party.
Absolutely. In fact, you know what? I was going to play an interview that I recorded yesterday with this this war correspondent, this guy named Luke Mogelson, who's a very well respected foreign correspondent who's covered wars. I mean, he was in most recently in Ukraine when he realized saw what was going on back here at home with the rise of these right wing extremists, these white nationalists, these white supremacists. And he thought, I need to get back there and cover this. And so he got back just in time to go to the Michigan State House as they were storming it to try to kidnap the governor and possibly assassinate her. And so he wrote this book called The Storm Is Here. But I'm calling an audible, everybody. I'm going to hold that for Monday because there's too much here. It's so much going on. This whole stunt is despicable. And I've got audio and video from Martha's Vineyard. I've got a video clip as the migrants, the asylum seekers, left Martha's Vineyard today. They went to an Air Force base on Cape Cod where they're setting up, you know, a dorm area for them and facilities so they can move forward and get moving on what they need to do. But the video here, I'll play it because there's really no audio. I'll show it while we're talking because you can see as they're boarding the buses, it's all like hugs and kisses, and the people on Martha's Vineyard really embraced these people from Venezuela who, you know, didn't know what to expect. They didn't know where they were being sent. And I guarantee you Ron DeSantis sent them there with a sneer thinking, oh, they're going to take care of these people, but not really take care of them. And instead you see hugs and kisses and grateful people. There are reports that they're leaving with new clothing. They're wearing, you know, Martha's Vineyard swag and sweatshirts, and the kids have toys. And
Ron said that.
Hold it. David, pick up the mic. David is here. Go ahead, Ron. He said what?
Ron said in his press conference today that even though these people were in Texas,
yeah,
he knew they were headed for Florida.
Oh, he knew that.
Now he's a multilingual mind reader.
Oh, I see.
In addition to all of his other skills.
Right. So that's the other thing, Lisa.
By the way, yeah. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, David. Hello.
Yeah, so that's the other part of it, is that, you know, again, these people were not in Florida, and that's where DeSantis might get hung up, because the rule that lets him use this money, that $12 million to move people out of Florida, it's to move people out of Florida. They weren't in Florida, right?
Well, I mean, there's so many things going on here. And I meant to mention, Nicole, that that story about Katzenbach really comes from Tom Hartman's historical research, which I've always enjoyed.
Uh-huh.
But you have this situation where it's not Ron DeSantis' slush fund. It's
no.
not Ron DeSantis' election fund. These are the dollars of the people of the state of Florida. These are their tax dollars that he's appropriating for his campaign, really.
That's right.
And as you point out, and as David points out, not even related to Floridians or people who are physically standing in Florida.
Right.
Not that I think that was necessarily what those funds were even for, you know, as described. But the fact is that that's not his slush fund.
No.
And for him to be using these taxpayer dollars in this way is really extraordinary. I hope there's an investigation of that as well, because this is that too seems unprecedented. I think it actually is unprecedented. And again, it seems also tied into, you know, the way the broader right wing infrastructure works, where Tucker Carlson is there, you know, with bated breath, eagerly like trumpeting what DeSantis did. So it's very much a coordinated play by the right wing to continue to try to use hate and fear to gin up the base, to try to keep people, to give them the addicted, you know, I think they've addicted their base to this sort of drug of hatred.
Oh, yeah.
And this is part of that scheme. And there's, you know, Tucker Carlson on Fox. They're, you know, hitting the sort of gerbil feed of trying to just continue to fuel that animosity and hate and the sort of own the libs thing of sending people to Martha's Vineyard. You know, it really is. It's disgusting. And it's, you know, it's immoral. And if these people had any real moral core, they might question what they're doing, aiding and abetting such extremism.
Yes.
And such vilification of human beings who are simply seeking asylum, seeking
right.
A place where after they've escaped from, you know, some difficult circumstances, where they can call their home, where they too could pursue the American dream if they can, you know, prove their asylum case or qualify, you know, for immigration status. And so, you know, I think it's just heart-wrenching, but it's also heartening, like you pointed out, that the response of the people who were targeted in Martha's Vineyard and the people who were victimized by DeSantis' stunt was to behave as human beings.
Yep.
And treat each other with kindness and consideration like we would expect anyone to do if we were ever in a circumstance.
And that's exactly what they did. I'm going to share an article from the Vineyard Gazette, because they've been covering this, obviously. There are people who live on the island year-round that are not wealthy. They're the people who work there. They work there and live there. And, you know, to live on that island, to work there, employers have to provide housing because you can't live. So it's an interesting dichotomy taking place there. So I'm going to share some of that in a moment after I let you go, Lisa. But this whole thing, and not to be, you know, upstaged, Greg Abbott had to do something because DeSantis was stealing his thunder. So he puts a bunch of them, these poor people, on buses and sends them to Kamala Harris's house. This is ridiculous.
I really hope that the American people, that the voters, now let me just speak personally and not on behalf of my organization,
yes.
But I really hope that the people in those states see through just the inhumanity of these men and recognize that they are unsuited to positions of public trust. They're unsuited to being in a position of crafting policy that serves the people of those states. And that includes Abbott's outrageous actions in terms of voting in 2020 over in Houston, you know, saying there's only one place that people can vote. Like, there's so many things these guys have done that are destructive of our democracy, that are destructive
yep.
of just core American principles and ideals. And I personally hope that the voters in those states, you know, vote them out, because these are the people who, in my personal view, their character does not warrant them having any position of power over other people, because clearly they're willing to abuse their positions of power in order to try to get political gain and for their own positions in office to stay in office. And I just think it's disgusting, personally.
It is. That's the only word to describe it. I think I heard the word grotesque used more in the last 24 hours than on television than I've heard it in probably the last 10 years. So, but it is. It's grotesque. It's disgusting. These people are showing their true colors, and we can show them what we think about it on November 8th. Or before, if you vote early. Lisa Graves, you're the best. Thank you so much for your expertise and sharing it with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Nicole. And I really appreciate all your efforts to make sure people understand what's going on and are really informed and can help inform their friends and neighbors about why voting in this election and every election matters so much for our present and our future. So thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend, Lisa, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Nicole.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Lisa Graves, again, check out TrueNorthResearch.org because they're doing amazing work over there. And that is her organization. She founded it. She heads it. And really, you know, in her last place, she exposed the Koch brothers, really introduced us to who they are, did all the research. And now, you know, she's turning the tables on Leonard Leo, making sure you know who he is and you should know. All right. So let me share. So I made this, called this Audible. We'll run the Luke Mogelson interview on Monday because it is good. I don't want to shortchange it, but there's other information we need to get to today. And I had to get Lisa on to find out about these two legal missteps, and I'm being really polite there. I could have used a different word. All right, so I found the Vineyard Gazette, vineyardgazette.com, and the headline on the front page today, this morning, 10:21 a.m., reads, "Buses roll out as migrants head to ferry and onto Joint Base Cape Cod." And let me share this with you because you know what? It's the weekend. This will warm your heart. You know what it reminds me of? There was the Broadway show Come From Away about Newfoundland, and the book that my friend Jim DeFede wrote that they drew some of the stories from called The Day the World Came to Town, which is when all the planes were grounded on 9/11 after it happened, and so many of them wound up landing in Gander, Newfoundland, and they were stuck there for a few days, and the people of this tiny little town, as isolated as it can be, took care of them. Well, it's a similar thing here. So let me share with you some of the story from the Vineyard Gazette. The 10 a.m. bells of St. Andrew's Church in Edgartown began ringing as about 50, mostly Venezuelan migrants, boarded Vineyard Transit Authority buses to take them to the ferry and then to a military facility on Cape Cod. In a news release, Governor Charlie Baker said the migrants who arrived unannounced by plane Wednesday on Martha's Vineyard would be provided shelter and humanitarian support at Joint Base Cape Cod. The Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency was coordinating efforts among state and local officials to provide access to food, shelter, and essential services for the migrants, including 7 children. The governor said he would activate up to 125 members of the Massachusetts National Guard as part of this relief effort. Tears, cheers, high fives, hugs, and photos were shared at Friday morning's goodbye, thus ending one chapter and beginning another in a saga that began when the migrants boarded 2 planes in San Antonio, Texas, with false promises of jobs and housing in Massachusetts. Rafael called out in Spanish as local volunteers hurried to prepare for the departure. "Get together, everyone. I want to know everyone who helped. Thank you. Blessings to everyone." The migrants spent 2 nights in temporary shelter at St. Andrew's Church while state and local officials pondered a longer-term humanitarian response. And then it goes on about to Joint Base Cape Cod and all that. According to the news release from the governor, housing will be in dorm-style spaces at the base, with separate spaces accommodating both individuals and families. Families will not be separated. You know, it's talking about how they're going to take care of them. Then talks about the three buses departed this morning to go to Cape Cod. Four immigration lawyers who had arrived in Edgartown on Thursday afternoon joined the migrants on the buses. Here's the part I like. Some boarded the buses carrying new backpacks, bedding, clothing, and even stuffed animals and soccer balls provided by members of the island community. Courtesy of Martha's Vineyard Community Services, the migrants received a donation of 30 cell phones Friday morning. At the departure, many expressed gratitude for their vineyard welcome, some wearing Go Vineyarders Harpoon the Whaler shirts given to them by the regional high school. Elio, in Spanish, said, "The people here are very good people. It was a nice surprise. You don't normally see that as an immigrant, but everyone was so helpful and kind. I don't know what's going to happen, but everything here was good. It was all good." And then it talks about here in Vineyard Haven, the group boarded the Steamship Authority MV Governor Ferry. Once the boat was underway, many flocked to the railing to take in the view and enjoy some fresh air between bus trips. A few made friends with Coco, the chocolate labradoodle. Owner Mark Allen, dressed in a colorful starfish patterned shirt, brought the pup around to perform tricks to help pass the time. Letitia, a migrant, said of the trip, "It's very fun, very pretty. I'd never been on a boat like this before." Letitia had left her family behind in Venezuela in search of job opportunities, she said, and the past few days have left her unmoored. And it goes on like that, talking about how the people were so good to them and they were not used to this kind of treatment. Good people dealing with these people who are in an unfortunate situation. Now I want to share with you a video that was published by the Miami Herald. This is in the middle of Martha's Vineyard. It's two immigration attorneys talking to the press here. And this will open your eyes to so, so much.
Arrived last night, make it clear that they were lied to again and again and fraudulently induced to board.
What? What? Hold on. Why is it?
Arrived last.
Uh-oh. Come on.
Arrived last night, make it clear that they were lied to again and again and fraudulently induced to board the planes. They were told there was a surprise present for them.
Huh.
And that there would be jobs and housing awaiting for them when they arrived.
Lies.
This was obviously a sadistic lie. Not only did those responsible for this stunt know that there was no housing and no employment awaiting the migrants, they also very intentionally chose not to call ahead to any single office authority on Martha's Vineyard so that even the most basic human needs arrangements could be made.
Amazing.
Ensuring that no help awaited the migrants at all was the entire point.
Wow. Cruel.
They were provided with a cartoonishly simple map of Martha's Vineyard.
Oh my God.
United States, and a brief brochure containing snippets from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts website and instructions to change their address with USCIS when they relocated. This is especially troubling, as anyone with even the most basic understanding of the immigration proceedings knows that USCIS was not the agency with whom the migrants would have to record their addresses.
Of course not.
It has nothing to do with their cases in any way.
Wow.
It is clear that this was an intentional attempt to ensure that these migrants were removed in absentia when they failed to change their address with the proper agency.
Wow.
This was a purposeful derailment designed to prevent people from complying with federal immigration policies. This is problematic because the state should not be interfering with federal immigration policy. Before they boarded the planes, the migrants were processed by agents of the Department of Homeland Security, who listed falsified addresses on the migrants' paperwork. Agents apparently chose random homeless shelters all across the country, from Washington to Florida, to list the migrants' mailing addresses, even when told by the migrants that they had no address in the U.S. According to the paperwork provided to them, the migrants are required to check in with ICE office nearest to the fake address chosen for them by DHS or be permanently removed from the United States, with some required to check in as early as this coming Monday.
This Monday.
It could not be clearer that this is an attempt to ensure that these people are ordered removed, even as they try as hard as they can to comply with the instructions provided to them. There is no other reason to list as someone's mailing address a homeless shelter in Tacoma, Washington, when they ship him to Massachusetts.
Oh, my God.
It is sickeningly cruel, throwing obstacles in the way of people fleeing violence and oppression, some of whom walked through 10 countries.
10 countries.
In the hopes of finding safe
safety.
It is shameful and inhuman. Many of these victims were deprived of medical care despite clear existing injuries. Ugh. These are human beings who were deprived of basic human rights. To the people who find themselves, these wonderful people,
yes,
who find themselves plane wrecked on our island, I have a message for all of them. You are not alone. We have your backs.
Yes.
We are proud to be here for you.
Fuck yeah.
And we've got you. If the intention of those who perpetrated this horrendous act was to create a crisis, you have failed.
Ooh.
Their demeanor is kind. Their demeanor is grateful. And their demeanor is just that they want to be doing everything right. Their biggest concern today is that many of them have dates to appear in San Antonio Monday morning.
Oh, God.
Tacoma, Washington, Monday morning. Washington, D.C., Monday morning. You tell me how that's possible.
We will be exploring all civil and criminal legal options to hold the perpetrators accountable and to prevent this injustice from repeating itself.
So that's the video that was put together by the Miami Herald, posted on the Miami Herald website. I will embed that in my website today on the blog where I post today's show. It'll be posted at NicoleSandler.com/9-16-22. Because here's the thing. That video ran 4 minutes and 21 seconds. No cable news or network news show is going to show that. It's too long. You know, that's the land of the interviews that last 5.5 minutes. I'm sorry, in 5 minutes, I barely get to say hello to the guest. That's, you know, that's not enough time. So to hear what these lawyers are saying, the disgusting behavior of Ron DeSantis in doing this, they knew exactly what they were doing. A lot of those people were given court dates in San Antonio or in Washington State on the other side of the country Monday morning, and they're sent to Martha's Vineyard? Come on.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. That's just so incredibly fucked up. It's the only way to put it. That's the technical term. Listen to this. Domingo Garcia, president of the League of United Latin American Citizens, a Hispanic civil rights organization based in Washington, D.C., was there at Martha's Vineyard. He was at the church this morning. He confirmed details of how the migrants were brought to the vineyard. Listen to this. Many were told a very specific promise. 3 months of work, they were going to get free housing and free transportation. And it was all just a terrible lie. This is a quote from Mr. Garcia. None of them were told they were going to Martha's Vineyard. Eliomar, a migrant from Venezuela, said it took him 2 months to travel to San Antonio from his home country. He said, I came here alone with no family. I walked. I took buses. I didn't know where Massachusetts. Is that how you say it? I'm here to work. I'm hoping to work. I can do painting, fishing, construction work. I want to go to Boston because that's where I heard where I can go. Representative Dylan Fernandez met the group on the Woods Hole side. He said the state is looking into longer-term housing solutions, and immigration services will be working with each migrant on a case-by-case basis. Mr. Fernandez said, this is what good government actually looks like. And this is what compassionate government actually looks like. And I couldn't be prouder of the people of Martha's Vineyard and Cape Cod for their incredible work here. And I couldn't be prouder to be from the state of Massachusetts. And I couldn't be more embarrassed and ashamed than to be from Florida. It's one of the reasons why we're moving out of this shithole state. Because a cretin like Ron DeSantis is the governor. Unbelievable. Listen, so he held this press conference today. And, you know, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California has been quite outspoken in his criticism of Mr. Death Sentence. And so how does Ron and Gavin Newsom uses facts on which to base his criticism. You want to hear what DeSantis says about Governor Newsom in response? Strap in.
So the governor of California sent a letter to the Department of Justice saying you need to prosecute Texas and Florida governors. Yeah. And all I can say is I think his hair gel is interfering with his brain function.
His hair gel? Hey, Ron DeSantis, I got a little song for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch, shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
I could go on, but you get it. You know. Up. I don't know why. Again, you know what? I need to remember to turn off my phone when I go on the air because I, invariably get a phone call. Hold on. It looks like, oh, no, I was thinking I got a message. I got a message from Tanya in Ukraine, who, by the way, let me, since I'm on that, I saw a telegram message on my phone. Let me tell you the last thing she said to me, because I wrote to her, by the way, Tanya is now receiving mail in Ukraine. So I'm going to resend the package that was returned that I sent to her in Dubai. But I said, it sounds like you guys are kicking some Russian ass over there. This was a couple of days ago, and she wrote back, hello, my darling. Yes, the news is very good in recent weeks. So many tears of joy. See, I thought we could use a little good news to head into the weekend. So Ron is asking, have I decided where I want to move? I don't blame you for wanting out of the Sunshine State. My niece lives there and hates the politics. Politics are horrible. Right now, I don't know. A lot depends on whether or not I find a job, whether or not David gets a deal going on a number of things he's been working on, because right now we don't have the money to move anywhere. So it depends on the house has to be either we sell it by December 1st or they take it from us on December 1st. One way or the other, we need to be out of here December 1st. So I've got a few feelers out in different places. But Arizona is what we were looking at, the Tempe, Phoenix area, because that's where David's son is. David went to school there, as did Max, his son, at Arizona State. And if it comes down to it, we may have to stay with Max for a little while until we get on our feet again. It's not a good time for us or for most people right about now. So that's the story. That's why I haven't been definitive about where we're going, because I don't know. And this weekend, I'll be packing things. I'll be putting things in a box to keep, box to sell, box to donate. I guess another box to throw away. So if you're in South Florida and want to help me, feel free. I am the worst. This is so not. I am not an, or I'm a creative kind of person. I am organized in that I tend to know where things are, except when I don't. In general, I know where things are, but yeah, I'm, you can see what my studio looks like. So anyway, I've got a big job ahead of me. And, so if you want to help, you can, you sound like us here in Texas, no money. Yeah. You know, look, to be honest with you, I've been struggling since the Bush Depression, since 2008. I never recovered from that. And so, yeah, I'm not going to get into that now because I get sad. So let me do something to cheer us all up as in the last couple of minutes of the show. And I hope he doesn't mind. And this, actually, you kind of need to see the video. So I promise you, I will put these. Do I have them here? What did I do with them? Okay, here they are. So we have a fairly new listener to the show. And his name is Robert, and a lot of you guys knew him before I ever met him when he called in, because I guess he's a regular caller to like Stephanie Miller and some of the other shows. It's Robert in Naples, Florida. who drives a truck. And he called me actually today. You know, I'm in my studio most of the day. And chances are, if you call the line in the middle of the day, I'll answer because I'm in here working anyway. So we had a nice conversation. And Robert told me that he took his family to D.C. for the weekend. They went to Stephanie Miller's sexy liberal show that they had tickets for it a few years ago, and it was canceled, and they, you know, it was rescheduled for this weekend. So they went, and his youngest child had never been to D.C., so they made a weekend of it. And he said, and then we made some videos. So Robert sent me a couple of videos that they made. Now, bear with me because the videos, I'll try to explain what's going on the video while it's playing the part that, you know, if in case you're listening on one of the audio streams and don't see it. I'll post these on with the other stuff that I post at NicoleSandler.com/9-16-22 as well, along with the video of the attorney from Martha's Vineyard. These two videos that Robert made with his family, so they are at the National Archives in Washington, D.C. Remember, the National Archives, they're the ones who have control of all, or ostensibly, have control of all those classified documents. So the camera goes to in front of the National Archives in Washington, D.C. Right now, we just see the steps. And let me hit play. Here we go. And the camera zooms in on, oh, here we go. Hot off the press this morning. What? So he's waving around folders of classified secrets. Classified. Get your nuclear secrets, he's saying. That is our friend Robert. So that was the first one. And then he gave us another video. Now, this one, I'm not as, I don't think this is Robert. This is why I got to clarify with him. Because it doesn't look like the same guy. But now we see another guy standing out in front. You can see on the building, on the top of the building, it says Nash Archives of the United States of America. And we see this guy standing in the doorway. Here we go.
National Archives of the United States of America.
And he's standing there with his folder of allegedly nuclear classified secrets, and he's running across the street. And he falls, and all the papers go flying everywhere. And cars are going by, and he's trying to pick up his papers of, you know, nuclear secrets that are classified documents that he's running away with. So anyway, I appreciate the humor. I'm a big fan of homemade humor, and that definitely fits that category. Robert in Naples. Good guy. And I love, love, love that he brought his family to Washington, D.C. for the weekend and that they did this. They made this video in front of the National Archives. That's what I call seizing the moment, seizing the day, and making it happen. It's just so good. And thank you, Robert, for the laugh and the smile heading into the weekend, because we all need it. You know, I've got other stuff. I was going to go off on Herschel Walker. I'll save all that for next week because we finally are getting to the end of the hour. So, you know what? I'll take a moment to tell you, if you've noticed the lovely artwork on the wall behind me, that's what I do in my spare time. Somebody, Francie, in the chat room mentioned the hearts. The hearts that are hanging on the wall behind me, those are mosaics. And it looks like glass mosaic. I made them, and the one next to it, the ocean sunrise, made those out of old CDs and DVDs. That's what made the mosaic tiles. The thing on over my right shoulder, as you're looking at the screen, it's on the left. That's just a window painting I did, and then there's a kitty. Let me go grab the kitty. Because I do paint pet portraits, and yes, I take commissions, and yes, I have time now should you want to get one for as a gift for somebody, because they make great gifts. So this is Athena, actually. This is Allison's cat, and I did because I'm trying to get hired painting pet portraits for this company that sends them out to their employees. So they like them done a certain way. So I did a few that were just like the face of the animal. So anyway, that's that. You like the mosaics from the CDs, huh? Hold on. Let me pull these down. I'll show you. I'm sure that was a beautiful picture of my ass. Sorry about that. So here's one of my mosaics. And Chris, who's asking about what music it was, I used blank CDs, and I used some that had other recordings on them, not commercially available CDs. I can't quite go there yet. All right. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Please. All right, we're in overtime now. I wanted to make that so that I can, you know, send it out to Progressive Voices and they can run it on the weekend because they run the show quite a bit on the weekend. So I give them a 60-minute long edition that they can run. And now we're in overtime. So, someone asked how much the house is selling for. It is a big house in a very nice area. And seriously, if you know anyone who might be interested, send me an email and I'll talk to you about it. We owe the bank so much, and it's one of those kind of situations. So here's one of my used CD DVD mosaics. I make the colors by using paint, and I melt them in an old toaster oven, and then I made this one. Oh, it goes this way because it is like a sunset. A mosaic too. So all the items that you see on the wall behind me are all for sale. And I do have others, not everything because I'm scattered, but at paintyourpets.net, there's a bunch more. I've got boxes that I create. I've been playing with books, folding the book pages and making art. So doing all kinds of stuff. If I move to Arizona, is Allison going with or staying in Florida? Right now, she's staying in Florida. She has a new apartment. She's living with her boyfriend. But I think eventually, once we go somewhere and get settled, especially if it's out west where it's beautiful and there are mountains and a landscape not similar to Florida's flatness, that she will join us after not too long. So I believe me, I'm going to have a hard time with that. But I think she'll follow us soon after. All right. So the kitten. You got to see the kitty here once again is the theme of the kitty. And I am still taking on commissions. The easel and the paints remain in the living room, which I have commandeered to be an art studio because this room is the radio studio. All right. Make a lake. Let's not say short sale, please. No, we're not talking about short sale. We're talking foreclosure. I mean, really, we're being foreclosed on, but here's what happened. Because the housing prices rose so much where we were underwater, we're not really anymore. So that gives us the opportunity to try to sell the house before the bank does and maybe walk away with a few bucks. Not saying it's going to happen, but you know, knocking on wood laminate. Anyway, you like the heart mosaic, Stephanie? Anybody who wants these, email me. We'll talk. I need to get rid of stuff before we move, so I'll give you a good deal. All right? All right. With that, we're done. And have a great weekend, everybody. I will see you back here Monday. And I know we have The Storm Is Here, Luke Mogelson's book on the show sheet for today, on the graphic that I'm going to put up in a moment when I play the news. We'll hear that interview Monday, and I promise it'll be worth it. And boy, do we have a week for you. So we'll have Luke Mogelson Monday. We have Marcy Wheeler on Tuesday. We'll have Howie Klein on Thursday. We will have Dar Williams on Friday. So the only open day next week is Wednesday, and we'll figure out something to do there. All right? All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And I will leave you with the news, such as it is. All right. You take care. See you Monday.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
We kind of had a good idea this was going to happen. The unqualified for the bench federal U.S. District Court Judge Eileen Cannon, appointed to her lifetime position by the former guy, is doing his bidding. On Thursday, she ruled that Judge Raymond Deary would be named a special master to review the documents seized by the FBI in their search of Mar-a-Lago last month. The judge also refused a Justice Department request to lift her temporary prohibition on the use of roughly 100 classified records removed during that search so they could pursue their criminal investigation. Next stop for DOJ is an appeal where Trump appointed 6 of the 11 judges on the panel. Lovely. Meanwhile, the former guy said Americans will not stand for any indictments against him for taking those top secret documents from the White House and warned that criminal charges could trigger big problems.
I think you'd have problems in this country, the likes of which perhaps we've never seen before. I don't think the people of the United States would stand for it.
Sounds like he's doing what he does best, inciting his followers. And now the public opinion about his theft of those classified documents is quite clear. A Fox Not News poll released Thursday found that 65% of registered voters, that includes 38% of Trump voters, agreed it was inappropriate for him to take sensitive documents from the White House. 56% said the FBI acted appropriately in searching Mar-a-Lago on August 8th. An NPR PBS Hour Marist poll released last week found that 44% of Americans and 5% of Republicans said Trump did something illegal when he took those classified documents. Another 17%, including 20% of Republicans, said he just did something unethical. And 47%, including 10% of Republicans, said Trump should be charged with a crime. If he is charged, the poll found 65% of Americans said he shouldn't run for president in 2024. That's versus 61% who don't want him to run regardless. In contrast to those numbers, President Biden's popularity has improved substantially from his lowest point this summer, suggesting that Biden and Democrats overall are gaining momentum just 2 months ahead of the midterm elections. Meanwhile, the condemnation was harsh from both sides of the aisle about the decision from the Florida governor to fly migrants to Martha's Vineyard, with many Democrats saying that this time DeSantis has gone too far. President Biden on Thursday night said that the administration has a process in place to deal with migrants at the border and that Republicans shouldn't interfere with, quote, political stunts. Speaking at a gala for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, the president said Republicans are playing politics with human beings, using them as props. What they're doing is simply wrong. The Boston Globe reporting that Massachusetts officials began searching Thursday for longer-term housing and legal aid for those Venezuelan refugees who were flown unannounced to Martha's Vineyard, while immigration lawyers and Democratic politicians called for an investigation into whether their abrupt relocations to the island was illegal. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker said that the state is exploring using Joint Base Cape Cod for temporary shelter and humanitarian services for the migrants, some of whom they said were lured by the promise of jobs and other services. Charlie Crist, the Democratic nominee for governor here in Florida running against DeSantis, is filing a Sunshine Law request for all emails, texts, and all forms of internal communication regarding the governor's plan to move these migrants to Martha's Vineyard. The request also asks for contracts and proposals surrounding the program. In a statement, Charlie Crist said, quote, Ron DeSantis decided to traffic human beings on the Florida taxpayer dime to score political points. It was cruel. It was probably illegal. And he owes the people of our state answers. Crist continued, Floridians have been forced to foot the bill for this governor to play his heartless political games, but we're holding him accountable. My question is, how is this DeSantis' business anyway? He paid to move these people from Texas to Massachusetts? Where does Florida enter that equation? Just asking. Now, while the news out of Ukraine has been positive in recent days, as Russian troops are forced to retreat, comes more horrific reports from the war zone. Ukrainian authorities have found 440 graves at a mass burial site in the eastern city of Izium, which was recently recaptured by Ukraine from Russian forces. Ukraine's defense ministry on Twitter said, quote, "We want the world to know what's really happening and what the Russian occupation has led to." Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky added that Ukrainian and international journalists will be shown the site to see what has been uncovered. Izium was subject to intense Russian artillery strikes back in April and was taken back by Ukrainian forces on Saturday, delivering a strategic blow to Russia's military assault in the east. Separately, the White House announced another $600 million in a security package for Ukraine on Thursday, providing them with another round of assistance during its ongoing counteroffensive against Russia. And on Saturday, President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden head to the UK for Queen Elizabeth's funeral on Monday. While there, the president is expected to meet privately with a number of allies, including the new UK Prime Minister, Liz Truss. Then it's back to the U.S., where the president will address the U.N. General Assembly in New York on Wednesday. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.